and welcome back to the Pumps and Systems Podcast. I'm your host, Drew Champlin, Managing Editor of Pumps and Systems Magazine. To let you guys know, you can subscribe to the podcast on Apple iTunes, Castbox, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and more. Today we will speak with William Lavoti, a columnist for Pumps and Systems Magazine, who writes the bi-monthly column Pump System Standards, and the next issue it will appear in is in December 2018. We're going to talk about the general scope document, and if you listen back to episode 3 of this podcast, William Lavoti spoke on common reasons why pump systems are poorly designed, and big reason of that is a lack of a general scope document or lack of adequate detail for a general scope document. So we're going to talk about that today. Let me introduce William Lavoti to you. William, how you doing?
Great, Drew.
Okay. What keeps you busy these days?
Well, I'm, as I told you in my last podcast, I am retired and, if you will, semi-retired. I'm on staff currently with J.K. Muir & Associates as a pump system, senior pump system engineer. And I still do some training on a select basis, as well as some unique consulting that would be outside the scope of J.K. Muir. That is where I do, where I assist certain OEMs and companies in marketing as applied to pumps and pumping systems. So I have kind of a diverse semi-retirement activity going on.
Okay, well, let's get started. First off, what are the parts to a general scope document?
Well, that's a good question, Drew. And it gets kind of extensive, but I don't want to freak anybody out, if you will, that may be under the impression that a general scope document is like writing the entire spec for a project. That's not the case at all. So, first of all, a general scope document, what's it all about? Well, the purpose of the general scope document is to provide a baseline understanding of the scope of your project. So what is included in this general scope document, as you asked? Okay, purpose and justification of the project is number one. And I'm not asking, you don't need to write a dissertation on this, but the purpose and justification of the project. Now, why would you do something like that? Well, when you hand that general scope document, when the end user hands that to the design engineering firm, they will have a pretty doggone good understanding of why you're even doing this project. And it gives a general overview of, okay, here's why we're doing this, and here's the impact it's going to make, i.e. on your bottom line, on your productivity, on reducing improving your EPA regulations, whatever it may be. So the first one is the purpose and justification of the project. The next one is the scope description. The scope description should include all known characteristics of the project's, the products, or the services, because this may be a two-part project where you're going to have to bring in people that's going to provide a service along with the product. So in this area, you need to define the components and services required for the project. The next step, or portion, is a high-level project requirement. This describes the capabilities to be met by the successful completion of the project. So you're defining, hey, at the end of this project, this is the results that we expect. Finally, another, the project boundary. They're an important part of the scope document as they identify what should be included in the project as well as what should not be included. So let's say you're doing a plant upgrade. You're expanding the pumping systems. You're telling them, okay, here's what you're going to do with regard to the expansion, but you're not going to do this. You're going to focus on this area. So you're telling them, here's what's included, This is what's not included. Your project strategy is the next one. This section of the project scope document should describe the strategy the project team will use in executing the project. What do I mean by that? Is this going to be done? Is there a real strict timeline? Is it going to be done during an outage or a turnaround? How much time do they have? Can they work 24/7? Or is there restricted work hours? Are you going to have to work around power outages or restrictions on people? Are there any type of security things that they have to work through? So all of that needs to be identified in the project strategy. The next item is project deliverables. Project deliverables are the products or results that the project is intended to produce. So you're going to be real clear here. And this is what we expect from you, and this is the result. It's that simple. But in many cases, people doing a general scope document never clarify that, and guess what happens? They get other than acceptable results. So now the next step, and it flows right along. Owner's acceptance criteria. So now, in the general scope document, you're telling this successful bidder, be it the engineering firm, EPC, whoever it is, here's my acceptance criteria across the board. You're going to state exactly what you are willing to accept, meaning in a pumping system, pump efficiency, system efficiency, reliability, vibration levels, and the list goes on and on. And in that owner's acceptance criteria, but now this portion, it can be extensive, depending on how clear and concise you want to be. But if you fail to deliver in this area, you may fail to get the results that you expect, and you're going to wind up getting into an altercation, if you will, with the successful engineering procurement construction firm. Project constraints is the next item. Project constraints are limitations that the project faces due to funding, scheduling, time, technology, or resources. So you need to state, here's my constraints. These are some issues that we're going to have to overcome. But you're letting the bidders, the people quoting the project, know that there are constraints involved. You don't want to blindside them. Project assumptions, because in many cases, in a project, especially in a project upgrade or what sometimes in my industry we call it a mega haul, where you're tearing out old equipment, putting into new, you're making some assumptions because there are certain things that you don't know. Let's say you're going to pull out a big circulating water pump. You don't have any idea what the intake structure looks like, what the sub base looks like. So in your project assumptions, you're going to state that you're assuming that the sub base is going to be in pristine condition. But what if it's not? So you need to lay that out in the project assumptions. I would be more prone to say, assume that the intake structure support base is degraded and will require additional work. What the extent of that additional work is, I don't know. That would be the place where you would state it in your project assumption. The other things that you could list that I don't always put down for obvious reasons, cost estimates, cost benefit analysis, are the last two items, and in many cases, I don't list those in my general scope document because, in my humble opinion, that's giving out too much information. But through my years of experience working for large investor-owned companies, I was required to put that in my document. But my personal recommendations is not to do that unless your upper level management requires you to add that piece of information. So that's those are the various points that should be included in a general scope document. I know I went on quite a bit in detail, but that was a very good question that you asked.
Okay, well, how long does the document need to be?
That's another good question. It should be long enough, and this is kind of a roundabout way to answer your question, Drew. It should be long enough to be very clear in what your purpose, scope, and deliverable should be, as outlined in those items I just listed. It could be for each one of those points in the general scope document. It could be a paragraph. It could be two paragraphs. It could be six paragraphs. Whatever it takes to be clear. Now, let me point out one thing. Your team, because no one individual is going to write this document. So depending on your teammates that are assisted in this document who have a vested interest in the project, they may want to write a segment of this document. And they may get rather lengthy, but there's an old adage. Too much information. There's no such thing as too much information. Have more information than is necessary, but not enough information in a project, especially in a pumping systems, can be a real mess. I don't want to say catastrophic, but it can be a real mess that you're going to have to live with until that project is decommissioned or the system is decommissioned. So more information is better than not enough information. So I know it's a roundabout way to answer your question, but that's the best answer I could give you.
Well, how long should it take to write the general scope document?
Sure. Again, using your teammates. You could actually, because of the diverse, group of your members of the team, the more diverse, the better off you are, you could task each section out to a specific teammate, and you could knock it out in short order in a matter of a few days. If you want to do it as a team/committee, it could take a little bit longer. I know people that have taken a week or so to do these general scope documents. I know other people would add a lot of time before the project was going to be where they were going to pull the trigger on the project, and they took several months. I've seen some that have taken 6 months. But another expression, I'll use a Dale Carnegie expression, clarity is power. So the ones that took a little bit longer said, we wanted to make sure that we were clear in our expectations, and I had to applaud them on that. So you take as long as you need, assuming you are not strapped for time to pull the trigger on a project, but you take as long as you need to be clear on your expectations.
Well, here's a potential problem. What if my plant doesn't have enough people for the teams you referenced?
Oh, okay. That's a fair question to ask, too. In that case, you could sub it out to a qualified, and let me emphasize, qualified third party. Now, there are some niche engineering firms that specialize in project management, scope development, consulting services relative to writing specifications. Now, you would need to qualify that third party, but there are niche engineering firms that specialize in that. They're not the big guys. They're smaller firms. So if you look around, do a search on the internet, you could find a firm that could do that for you. And what they would do is they would come in and interview the client that wants the project, the document prepared, to fully understand what they are looking for, they would ask these questions that we just listed, and then go back and prepare the general scope document, sit down and review it with the client to make sure it was acceptable, and then the document would be submitted to the EPC. So there's ways of getting around that, and there are a lot of companies that simply don't have that depth that would need to go to an outside party for that document. But something I do want to emphasize, don't let the fox guard the hen house. Don't go to your engineering firm that you're going to bid the project with and ask them to write the general scope document. That's like giving a bank robber the password to the safe or the combination to the safe. You know, that's insane. You need to have a independent third party that's qualified to prepare this document to handle that portion of project development.
Okay, and last off, I know you're going to write the column in December 2018. It's called Pump System Standards, the series, which I know you don't want to give away anything, but what would you want to say to the listeners to close out this podcast?
Because my next article is going to cover a lot of this, I don't want to give away the store. But what I will share with you that I would like to end this podcast with is the number one key to a general scope document. If you miss everything else, the number one thing is to clearly define what your expectations are. If you don't know diddly squat about specking out a pump, what kind of coupling you want, and so on, okay, fine. We'll get around that. But the one thing I want to leave everybody with is make doggone sure you are clear with your owner's acceptance criteria. And where am I going with that? In your scope description, add, if you don't know anything about specing a pump, what you do want to define is your system efficiency. I've written a number of articles on this at Pump and Systems Magazine, and I'm going to beat everybody over the head with it again. Don't think component efficiency. Think system efficiency. So you want to define, state, and this could be a standard blurb that everybody could use in any pumping system application in the general scope document. I want an optimized system. What do I mean by an optimized system? I want the most efficient system available possible that will deliver the required amount of head and flow in this pumping system as required, but I want it as efficient as possible. And I want the most reliable maintenance-free system that could available. So that now when the engineering firm gets this general scope document, there's no misunderstanding. They aren't going to build this system on a first-cost, low-cost basis. They're going to have to produce a very efficient, reliable, maintenance-free, or a low-maintenance pumping system. So that's what I would like to leave everybody with, is that piece of information. The other aspect in the scope description that I would recommend is that the system must be modeled using state-of-the-art flow modeling technology. And in the owner's acceptance criteria, that flow model must be reviewed with the end user prior to release of the specification, or of the project, I should say. So this is to ensure that before they ever start buying equipment, cutting pipe, that you are certain that the system is going to be efficient, reliable, And if it's efficient and reliable, it's going to have low maintenance cost. Kind of got a wordy there, but if you don't do anything else in this general scope document, you do need to make those statements. And obviously the wording can be refined accordingly, but you need to get that point across. And this is where a lot of end users fail to state what their expectations are, and as a result, they get an unreliable, problematic system. I spent a lot of my career, as I worked for numerous OEMs in both pump OEMs and motor OEMs, going into plants with brand new systems, and they're all boogered up. And I started asking questions. I said, what did you state in your general scope document? What's a general scope document? I said, you mean to tell me that you didn't tell the engineering firm what your expectations were? No, that was up to them. Oh, no, it wasn't, Mr. Customer. It was up to you to tell them what you want. And I see this all the time. This is why I'm so passionate about educating the end user in this important piece of information, this document that they must produce and deliver to the bidders, engineering firms that are bidding the project that are going to develop the spec. The spec has to be built around this general scope document.
That's great stuff. William Lavoti, thank you so much for joining us, and we look forward to reading your column.
It's been a real pleasure, Drew, and thank you for having me.
And that wraps up this edition of the Pumps and Systems Podcast. Please go subscribe on iTunes, CastBox, Stitcher, SoundCloud. Go to pumpsandsystems.com/podcast. You can leave us a rating and a review. Let us know what we're doing right. Let us know what you want to hear. You can email me, Drew Champlin, at dchamplin@cahabamedia.com. That's CahabaMedia.com. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll talk to you guys soon.